How's your car looking? Showing its age? Faded paint? Dents? Dings? Don't worry. Maaco is here to help. They're the experts in affordable paint jobs and light collision repairs, helping you keep your car looking its best without breaking the bank. With Maaco's national reach and community focus, you're not just getting top-notch service. You're actually getting a partner you can trust. Visit your local Maaco today and see how they can refresh your ride. Go in, get the free estimate, and the expert technicians will handle the rest. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast12. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast12. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
You never forget the first time the world of the living and the world beyond collide, especially when you're 6 years old and summer should mean nothing scarier than mosquito bites and scraped knees. The year was 1987, out past the quiet streets of a small Montana town. A patch of country land stretched flat and wide beneath the blue-white sky. That land had belonged to my grandfather for as long as I could remember. To most people, it was just pasture grass, an old oak tree that bent in the wind, the rusted skeleton of a fence. But buried under that soil were stories, a homestead that had burned down long before I was born, and locals whispered an old native burial ground just beyond the property line. The adults rarely mentioned it. Kids like us could feel it in the hush that came over the grown-ups when the subject slipped out. That summer I was 6, my brother 4, our cousin 5. We were barefoot and sunburned and believed the world was ours. By afternoon, the air smelled of cut hay and the resin of hot pine. We chased each other around the oak tree that anchored the yard, hiding our battered toy truck as part of an endless game of find it. It was my cousin's turn to seek. I'd hidden the truck behind the oak's gnarled roots, a perfect spot in my 6-year-old mind. When she couldn't find it, I grinned, pointed toward the tree, and froze. Someone was already there. A small figure crouched by the roots, holding the toy truck as if it were his own. At first, I thought it must be a neighbor kid, maybe from the ranch down the road. He was small, boy-sized. But there was something wrong. Something that made my cousin gasp and bolt for the house before I could stop her. I stayed. I was six, still too naive to know when to be afraid. I walked toward the figure and asked, as politely as a child could, if I could have my truck back. The boy looked up at me. He had no face, no eyes, no mouth, just a dark shape of a head that tilted in my direction. Before I could scream, he simply vanished. The truck slipped from his hands and rolled down the route toward me. That was the moment the world tipped sideways. I grabbed the toy and ran, my legs shaking so badly I nearly tripped in the grass. Inside, my cousin and I spilled out the story to Grandma, voices high and breathless. She barely looked up from her chores. "Quit your fibbing," she said, "and shoot us back outside." But the day wasn't done with us. My brother, too young to know better, decided to join the investigation. We had him in back in the yard long before we noticed more movement in the oak tree, several smaller shapes peeking from the branches like curious squirrels. They weren't squirrels. They were gray, the color of ash, with thin arrow-like shapes rising from their heads as if pointing toward the sky. All of them watched us, all but one, the same faceless black boy who sat motionless at the base of the tree, his head angled as though he were listening. We did what any kids armed with summer squirt guns would do. We opened fire, spraying water into the leaves, shrieking in a mixture of terror and bravado. The gray ones ducked behind the branches, peering out again, with a twitch of movement that felt almost playful or predatory. The black figure never moved. He only stared. When the last gold light of the sun slipped behind the horizon, every one of them vanished, leaving the oak tree swaying in the dusk, as if nothing had ever been there. That was our initiation into the unknown. And it didn't end there. Through the years, those little black figures returned, often without warning, often when we least expected them. We began to sense them before we saw them, as if the air would thicken first. Sometimes we would will them not to appear, whispering to each other that if we expected them, maybe they'd get bored and stay away. But that's not how it worked. The more we wished them gone, the more often they came. Once my brother claimed he saw a larger black figure standing at the edge of the field, silently waving him closer like an impatient adult. The gesture was eerie enough that my brother turned and sprinted toward the house. When he glanced back, the figure was still there, but now it was waving him away, as though dismissing a child who had spoiled the game. I carried the weight of those summers in my nightmares for years, always afraid I'd run into one of them again. But the strangest, most chilling figure didn't come from the trees. She came from the upstairs hallway. It happened late one night when my cousin and I were supposed to be asleep in my bedroom. Our giggling had kept us up past midnight, whispering secrets in the dark until a sound, or maybe a feeling, made me glance toward my brother's room across the hall. A girl was standing there. She looked about 17, her posture stiff and still, as if she'd been rooted to the spot for decades. She wore a long bluish dress, an umbrella hanging loosely in one hand, a small purse in the other. Her hair was braided neatly on both sides, the way you'd expect from an old-fashioned school portrait. But it wasn't her clothes that froze me. It was her expression, vacant, fixed on some invisible point beyond us. She didn't look angry, but she didn't look peaceful either. Her stare was hollow, distant, as if whatever she was seeing wasn't in our room at all, but somewhere far away, or long ago. I nudged my cousin, and she turned, saw the girl, whispered, "Who is that?" I had no answer. Neither of us moved until the weight of that cold stare became unbearable. We dove under the covers and stayed there until the first hint of daylight. In the morning, we compared notes. Every detail matched. For weeks after that, I avoided looking into my brother's room. Even passing the doorway in daylight made my stomach clench. Those were just the earliest chapters in what became a childhood defined by the sense that our house was more than four walls. The doorbell often rang when no one was there. At night, we'd hear muffled voices in the backyard, convinced it was my dad and brothers, only to find out they were down at our grandparents' place the whole time. I once thought I saw my older brother sitting silently in his dark basement room. I spoke to him, got no answer, and fled upstairs, where I found him, sprawled on the living room floor watching TV. Another time, my cousin and I swore we heard the familiar timbre of my dad's voice outside calling us by name. The yard was empty. As children, we tried to make sense of it, tried to arm ourselves with squirt guns and bravado, but the truth is we were out of our depth. Those encounters opened a door we never meant to open, and once we'd looked through it, we could never unsee what was waiting on the other side. If childhood is supposed to be a bubble of safety, ours had holes punched right through it. After that summer of faceless figures and the girl in the hallway, we learned to live with a quiet dread that the adults around us could never quite understand. The house itself began to feel alive, not in a warm way, but as if it were paying attention. A creak in the stairwell could send a jolt of recognition through my spine. They're back. Sometimes it was sound that betrayed them. Our old front door bell was the sort you had to press with a stiff thumb, a hard metal button that clanged instead of chimed. It had a particular mechanical note we all knew. That bell rang often, always in twos or threes. Yet every time we opened the door, the porch was empty, the yard beyond still as a photograph. Grandma called it just the wind. Even at six, I knew the wind couldn't press a bell. Other nights, it wasn't sound but that sudden charge in the air, as if the walls themselves had drawn a breath and were holding it. We'd feel it before we heard anything, a prickling on the back of the neck, the hush before a thunderclap. There was one incident I've never shaken. My cousin and I were up far past bedtime, whisper laughing the way kids do. When I saw it again, movement in my brother's doorway. At first it looked like a huge black hand, fingers curling around the frame from the hallway side, squeezing itself into view as though testing the boundary between one world and another. We stared, transfixed, until the hand slipped back into the dark, leaving us frozen under the thin quilt, afraid to move or breathe. The upstairs rooms weren't the only part of the house that felt watched. The basement, partly finished, mostly storage, had its own personality. Our father built two bedrooms down there for the older boys, and on winter nights, the smell of cold cement and damp wood rose up the stairs. Once convinced, I saw my older brother sitting silently in his basement room. With the light off, I called out to him. He didn't answer, didn't even stir. The stillness was so wrong, it pushed me up the stairs two at a time, and I burst into the living room to find him sprawled on the carpet watching TV, oblivious. Another evening, my cousin and I heard both my dad's and my brother's voices drifting in from the backyard. The cadence was unmistakable, the low rumble of dad's tone, the rise and fall of the boys teasing each other. We ran outside, expecting to see them by the fence. The yard was empty. The night air smelled of alfalfa and dust. Much later, we learned they'd been down the road at our grandparents' the whole time. It's one thing to think you see shapes in the dark. It's another to hear familiar voices call to you from places no one occupies. By then, we were becoming veterans of the weird. We had a ritual for the oak tree creatures, squirt guns at the ready, quick escape routes mapped to the porch steps. We had our rules for the upstairs hallway. Don't look into my brother's room after sunset. If you hear the bell, ignore it. But all those strategies did little to protect the part of us that still wanted to believe the house was only wood and nails. The older I got, the more I understood that children notice things adults filter out. Maybe the grown-ups couldn't afford to see it. They had bills and work and worries that required a stable world. We didn't have that luxury. We saw the cracks. There's one image that visits me even now in half-remembered dreams. That 17-year-old girl in her bluish dress, her hair braided on both sides, holding her umbrella and purse like she'd stepped out of another century and lost her way in our hallway. Her expression was the worst of it. Not rage, not sorrow, but a kind of stunned horror as if she'd witnessed something terrible and was still seeing it replay. She didn't look at us. She looked through us to some place only she could see. That detail and the unfocused gaze has haunted me more than any shadow figure because it made me feel like an intruder in my own home. After that night, I made a decision only a child can make with such certainty. I told the unseen things out loud that I never wanted to see them again. I figured if ghosts were listening, maybe they'd respect boundaries. And in a strange way, they did. I kept feeling them. The brush of presence in a cold hallway. The prickle at the nape of my neck. But I rarely saw them head on again. I didn't need to. Sensing them was enough. There's a theory some people have that the land remembers. Our grandfather's property carried layers of history. The long-gone homestead that burned to the ground, the rumored native burial ground just beyond the tree line. Maybe we were trespassing on someone else's memory, living our ordinary childhood on top of stories that refused to stay buried. Whatever the explanation, the land felt older than our games, older than the farmhouse itself. The three of us, my brother, my cousin, and I, grew up half expecting the next odd thing. A toy rolling across the floor by itself barely rated a gasp after a while. We learned to sleep light, to ignore the doorbell that no neighbor had pressed, to keep our squirt guns full, just in case. But no matter how we adapted, we never stopped dreading sundown, when the last ray of light drained from the yard and shadows deepened under the oak tree. Looking back now, I can see how those experiences marked us. Little soldiers drafted early into a war most people never have to fight. The battle to believe your own senses when everyone around you insists it's all imagination. We eventually grew up and left that house behind. But the house never quite left us. When I was a teenager, I realized that the scariest part of those years wasn't the shadows or the girl in the dress. It was the silence that followed every incident. No adults ever believed us. Every plea for them to come look, every breathless retelling of what we'd just seen was met with the same shrug, imagination. Kids make things up. That dismissal became its own haunting. It taught us early that whatever was happening, we were on our own with it. Sometimes I wonder if that's why I've never stopped sensing things, because I had to keep the channel open as a child to prove to myself I wasn't crazy. I can still remember the oak tree figures so vividly. The black boy who vanished mid-stair, the gray ones with their strange, arrow-like protrusions peering from the branches, their heads tilting in curiosity. We never figured out what they wanted. We just knew they appeared at dusk and disappeared with the last shaft of sunlight, as if the dark itself had absorbed them. My brother swears there was one evening he saw a larger one, tall and thin, standing out in the field beyond the fence line. He says it raised an arm, motioning him forward. The moment he hesitated, it seemed to wave him off as though shooing a child from danger. I've never been sure if that gesture was a warning or a trick. He still gets goosebumps talking about it. Years later, long after we'd moved away, my cousin admitted she still dreams of that hand squeezing the door frame, the one that looked too big for a human's and too deliberate to be the settling creak of an old house. In her dream, the fingers keep curling farther into the room each night. She always wakes before it crosses the threshold. I've had my own carryovers, not visions, but a wariness that lives in my muscles. A reflex to glance toward dark corners, a tension in my breath when a house is too quiet after sunset. It's like a sense memory of those summers. The dread stitched into my nerves. Over the years, I came to believe children do have a way of seeing that adults lose. Maybe it's innocence. Maybe it's the kids haven't yet convinced themselves the world is ordinary. We hadn't built the filters grown-ups need to keep going to work and paying bills. We saw the cracks in the world, and sometimes things peered back at us through them. I've often wondered about the girl in the blue dress, the umbrella, the braids, the purse clutched in one hand. Her image feels like an old photograph burned into memory. Who was she? A traveler lost on some long-ago rainy day? A memory the house itself was playing back? Her expression, that vacant, horrified stare past us, made her seem more witness than threat. I sometimes think she was trapped in her last moment of seeing something dreadful, forever frozen in that gaze. There's a question I've carried into adulthood. Were those figures ever human? The girl felt human, sad, misplaced, tethered to our hallway. The oak tree things felt different, almost otherworldly, as if they belonged to the land more than to any story of the dead. It's an unanswerable question, and maybe that's what keeps the memories alive. The mystery itself has its own gravity. When people ask whether I still believe in ghosts, I tell them I believe in what I experienced, in toys hurled across a room with no hand to throw them, in a bell that rings without a finger pressing it, in voices where no one stands. I believe in the feeling that a room can hold a breath, call it energy, call it memory, call it haunting. The label doesn't matter. The experience stays the same. I did make a choice as I got older. I asked out loud not to see them anymore. I decided I'd rather feel than see. And for the most part, that request seems to have been honored. The house we live in now has its creaks and sighs like any other, but I haven't seen a figure step out of the dark in years. I think some part of me would still recognize that prickling in the air if it came back. But every now and then, usually at dusk when the trees throw long shadows across a field, I catch myself looking, half expecting to see a black silhouette waiting by the yoke or a slim girl standing just beyond the threshold of a doorway that isn't there anymore. I don't know if that's memory or something more. What I do know is that I never entirely trust an empty hallway after dark. Maybe that's the real legacy of a haunted childhood. Not the ghosts themselves, but the way the world never quite feels solid again. You learn early that the ordinary can split open at any moment, that there are things adults can't explain and children aren't supposed to know. You carry that knowledge like a secret, even when the house is long gone and the fields have changed. And sometimes, in the quietest moments before sleep, I wonder if the figures remember us too. Three small kids with squirt guns and trembling laughter, staring back at them from a backyard where daylight was always too short. We tell ourselves childhood fears fade when we grow up, but some nights, when the house settles and the hallways go still, I hear that doorbell's hollow chime and remember, some things never leave. They just wait until you're willing to notice them again.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.